Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast. Just an hour after Andy Murray took Great Britain into the Davis Cup by BNP Paribas final for the first time in 37 years, 1978 was the year that Britain was last at that stage, and they are joined by Belgium, who have been away from the Davis Cup final for even longer. 1904 was the year that Belgium last were in the Davis Cup final. That was also against Great Britain. And so the final will be in Belgium, in Ghent, 27th to the 29th of November. My name is David Law. I'm joined here by the Telegraph's tennis correspondent Simon Briggs and Catherine Whittaker here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with the Telegraph and supported by BNP Paribas, the bank for a changing world. And you can hear they are dismantling the stadium as we talk to you just an hour after the semi-final, in which Simon Briggs, Andy Murray did what we all expected he would do, but there were none of the stressful moments that we had at the Queen's Club in the reverse singles rubber. He was on fire today.
Yeah, we could do some sort of demolition pun, couldn't we? So they're taking down the stadium, and Murray certainly took Tomic apart brick by brick today. And really, there wasn't an awful lot of doubt, I didn't feel, from the first game onwards. In fact, he started with an ace. Second point was quite revealing, because he went with a wide serve and a forehand into the corner. Tomic didn't bother chasing it. He just was like, oh, well, that's a bit good for me. And that was kind of his whole attitude throughout the match. Well, this is a bit good for me. I don't know if I like it very much. And then he came in afterwards, and he was, you know, he said, I need to look at this and learn what I can do to get better, which is what his team captain Wally Mercer said as well. But yeah, it was another schooling, and really the meat of this match was the doubles rubber. And I don't think Bernard had much belief once that had gone. He pretty much admitted that, really, didn't he? He didn't have much belief that there was any way back.
And that is the problem, isn't it, Catherine? Because tennis-wise, Bernard Tomic played really well at points today. Certainly in the first set, he was at times taking charge of the rallies, but Andy Murray just kept on getting one more ball back. And I thought, he's basically broken the guy's heart. He's broken his spirit. He stopped him believing.
Yeah, but as Simon points out, his spirit looked to be broken on the second point. That I don't think he came into the match with oodles of spirit, only to have it broken. I think he came into the match running low on spirit. And
I think he came in low on self-belief. I just don't think he thought he could beat the guy.
Maybe, but probably his only chance would have been to try and run everything down. And as complimentary as Leighton Hewitt was about Bernard Tomic's performance, I'm sure he wasn't watching him fail to chase down balls. Yeah, I'm sure Leighton Hewitt, though he didn't say anything about it in post-match press, I'm sure he had a thought or two about Bernard Tomic's failure to run down a few of those balls, because it was not in the image of Leighton Hewitt, who's become sort of the archetypal Davis Cup hero, always answering the call, always leaving 100% out there. I just don't... I mean, yes, of course it hinged on the doubles. Of course, everybody knew it hinged on the doubles. Of course, nobody was expecting Bernard Tomic to get a point there. But you're still representing your country. Just put in everything you've got for that reason.
Yeah, it's something that he probably, at this point, Simon, has yet to really find out whether he's got within him, I suspect, Tomic. Does he have that insatiable desire to win at pretty much any cost, which certainly Leighton Hewitt has?
He's sort of languid.
And Andy Murray has.
He's sort of a languid player, isn't he? And he quite likes to play cat and mouse, which is actually quite a Murray-ish characteristic. They, as Andy said afterwards, they share a certain amount of style, and maybe that's why he doesn't find it easy against Andy, because he's used to people who can't handle his deftness and his changes of spin and his slowing down of the game when he wants to do it, because Andy just outslices him when it comes to that. But that, not many players in the world can do that. He just didn't really have anywhere left to go. You know, Bernard, he's a super talent. He's really doing well in the rankings. He's going to be top 20 next week for the first time. What he hasn't done is beaten a top five player since 2011, I think, when he beat Söderling. So that would be the next step for him, and he's obviously going to have to, and he's admitted it actually, he said fitness is my big problem. He's going to have to add a lot more strength and endurance if he's going to start beating top five players regularly.
It puts Great Britain into this final now against Belgium in late November in Belgium. It's going to be interesting to see what they put it on. Andy Murray was certainly suggesting that it was going to be on clay in Belgium. In fact, he said that when they were not even level yet in the tie, he was convinced Belgium would win, and that's where it would end up.
Yeah, I spoke to Leon Smith all the way back in the US Open about, you know, just in case we get through, I didn't want to take anything for granted, what do you think they will do about a venue? And he said, I shouldn't worry about it too much. Belgium are going to win that semi-final. I don't think we need to look too far ahead, really. And he was right. You know, the Belgians came through a tough fifth rubber, with Darcy's serving. Well, he didn't quite serve it out, did he? He won it in the tiebreak in the fourth set, so they showed a lot of character. But yeah, I would have thought that the argument for clay is that Andy would be coming out of the World Tour finals, so he's going to have to do a sort of four-day turnaround, getting off the hard courts, getting his footwork and his body ready for clay, which is quite a different set of movements. That's almost the main argument for it. Not so much that the players on either side are really well suited to it, but simply that it's an irritation factor for Murray, and Murray is the key to the tie.
That was an extraordinary scene over the last half an hour, Catherine, where we were in the press room. Simon would have been writing up his piece for The Telegraph, and so many pairs of eyes were looking at computer screens, watching live scores of Belgium's outcome.
Watching live scores of Federico Delbonis and Steve Darcis. Who would have thought it? Those two, I hope it's not disrespectful to say, slightly unlikely tennis heroes. And there were definitely moments where it looked like Delbonis was going to really at least take it to a fifth set, and who knows from there. That was the first glimpse I got in it visually of the Belgian support, and it was very impressive indeed. They seemed to have quite impressive headgear, some sort of Mohicans in black, red and gold.
Which, I'm definitely going to go with those when we're over there.
Which I look forward to seeing more of. I would very much expect that tie to be on clay. I'd be putting it on clay, exactly as Simon says, for the annoyance factor for Andy Murray. You've just got to make Murray as uncomfortable as possible and hope that David Goffin does his stuff.
Absolutely. Now, we heard from Andy Murray afterwards. Now, obviously, he's delighted, but he also did reveal that he had some physical issues.
I wasn't concerned about how much I had left in the tank. I was more concerned about my back. My back had been giving me a lot of trouble this week, you know, the few days before the tie as well. You know, sometimes after you have played a lot of tennis or whatever sport it is you do, or a lot of exercise, when you do then take a break, you know, the muscles and everything stiffen up a little bit, they tighten up, and then when you come back, you can have some issues. So maybe it was to do with that.
You said yesterday that you hadn't really had time to think about what it would mean to win the Davis Cup in terms of, you know, your own personal achievements in your career. Have you had any more time to, you know, assess what that would mean?
No, I've thought about what it means to reach a final. It's not think about winning the event, you know, if we have an opportunity to do that in the next match. But, you know, so much tennis still to go. Still need to win three matches, and there's still 2 or 3 months before the next tie, and a lot can happen between now and then. There's no guarantees, but reaching the final is you know, a big achievement, something that hasn't been done for a long time, and you know, everyone in the team should be very proud of that.
So there's Andy Murray, and what about the captain, Leon Smith? Afterwards, he spoke to Catherine.
Leon, many congratulations. Team GB, Davis Cup finalists. Just how proud are you right now?
Yeah, it sounds good when you say that. We're absolutely delighted. I watch yet again in amazement what Andy Murray puts through the weekend. How he can keep going and play all these best of five setters 3 days in a row is pretty incredible, especially when he's, you know, hurting. He's got his back is giving him issues. He just fights, and he's just such a great role model for anyone else in and around our team. But obviously now we obviously can't wait for the final, but now we've come this far, we've got to make sure that when that time arrives, we really do everything we can to try and win this.
In the early days of your captaincy, a lot of your job was about restoring respectability to Team GB, given how far we were in the doldrums. At what point did you start to think this year, hang on a second, we've got a team that could win the Davis Cup?
Well, it was always tough because, you know, without Andy, it would be very difficult to get this far. But I think what's happened over the years is that we've seen the emergence of very good doubles players, and there's been quite a few of them. But, you know, more recently it's obviously been Jamie and Dom, who are now making, you know, we saw a finalist of Wimbledon US Open in Jamie and a semi-finalist of US Open in Dom, and to have that in your team gives you a lot more confidence. But I think looking back to last year when, you know, we beat USA away, and it was important getting a win from James Ward against one of those teams as well. It means that we're not always relying on Andy getting every rubber. And then, you know, we had a chance in Naples, we went 2-1 up. You kind of think, well, if you can get through that, we're in the semi-finals. So I think last year we started to really believe that we had a stronger makeup of a team. And then this year we got off to a great start, you know, because we obviously had that great win against USA and Wardy, you know, winning that spectacular match against Isner on day one helped a lot. And then really it's been the story of Andy helped with Jamie in the last two matches.
10 weeks roughly until the final, presuming he's fit and healthy, Andy Murray picks himself, but there's three guys, aren't there, in the running for that second singles place. What would you like to see from them in that 10 weeks? Do you want to see them go out there and prove to you why they should be picked?
100%, and I've said that to the three of them already, that I think, you know, there's going to be a couple of people really disappointed not to play, but all three of them need to go out and just fight and knuckle down, and to be fair, they, you know, they should be doing that anyway, but there is a big incentive coming up, and this, you know, however long it's been since the last final, what is it, 37 years or something since the last one, you know, if this isn't big enough incentive to go out there, get the right schedule, work hard every day in practice, and take a good look at yourself every single day, and earn that spot in the team, that's what we want. Because if all three of them do that and the doubles players, then we're going to come in with I'd much rather be picking out of form and making a tough decision because everyone's playing well and everyone's had a great run. That'd be a much better situation, and I hope that's what it's going to be.
It's been great to see James Ward and Kyle Edmund on the sidelines during this tie. How have they found the weekend? Have they found it difficult not being involved?
Yeah, I mean, of course it's difficult because, you know, they're desperate to play, and I would be disappointed as a captain when I knock in their hotel room on a Wednesday evening to tell them who's in and out. If I tell the guys that are out and they high-five me, you know, on the way out, there's something wrong. So they should be hurting, but the good thing is that they, you know, they stick around and then get over that disappointment and support the team. And that's what's really important about this event, is that you've got to win, lose, draw as a team, and that's what we aim to achieve. Because, you know, as you mentioned earlier, it's been a long journey on this one as this team, this staff, these players, and it's important to stick together.
Just finally, a quick word from you on the crowd. I don't think there's been a single person in the arena today, yesterday, the day before, whose hairs haven't stood on end. At one point, does that include you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from day one, when you come out and get presented to the crowd in the first instance, and you hear, you know, when Andy Murray's name gets called out, the place just absolutely erupts. And it just impresses me how even the crowd with Dan Evans on day one, and I'm actually hearing them in the background now, how he's playing a dead rubber, they're still going nuts. You know, it's been in a wonderful, wonderful atmosphere again. They should be very proud of themselves because they've actually helped the team a lot.
Thank you.
So Leon Smith, Simon, absolutely delighted with what he saw. It was quite a revelation from Andy Murray about his physical condition, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we saw that he was crouching over a bit early on in the doubles, but he really said that he had been having the problem since Tuesday night when the back locked up unexpectedly after practice with no particular obvious reason why it had happened. The remarkable thing is that they still sat down on Friday night and said, we want to go with the strongest doubles combination, even at the cost and the physical pain it's clearly going to put you through. And he, I'm sure, was the driving force in that. The guy is so mentally strong and has that courage, really. I mean, that's a brave thing to do because they played for 4 hours. It was a ferocious match. It was the best doubles match I can remember watching. So, you know, hats off to Andy again. You got to say we're grateful for him.
Absolutely. So, Simon, we're going to send you off to go and write your finishing touches to the Telegraph's piece. What's going to be in tomorrow?
Well, we're going to have just a report on today's events and then maybe a little Meet the Belgians sidebar, although I haven't got that far yet, so I need to have a word with the office. But I think it's pretty sort of straightforward, a big page of tennis.
Who's going to win this Davis Cup final?
Well, it's Britain's to lose, isn't it?
Simon Briggs there, nailing his colours to the mast, and off he goes to finish off his Telegraph pieces that you'll be reading over the next couple of days. Catherine Whittaker, the other great story of this tie was Leighton Hewitt, wasn't it? And just wonderful to see him one final time out on the court.
Yes, we'll miss him when he's gone, particularly almost as much as anywhere at the Davis Cup. I think he's been such a model for answering the call. I can't think of another player that's never answered the call, and that is a huge testament to him, especially as, you know, he's not got a style of game that's light on the body, and he's suffered his fair share of injuries, and to never ever have said, do you know what, it's a bit too much for me just now. It's never been too much for him, and that I think the Davis Cup will be poorer without him. I think it's a terrible blow for them because he's carried the flag for it, hasn't he? He's said to all the other players, you should be playing in this. Shame on you for not answering your call. And I hope that somebody else will pick up that flag, and it could be Andy Murray.
Certainly could be, although I'm sure he'll be wanting certain other members of the Australian team in the future to pick it up. Certainly Tanasi Kokkinakis was talking very enthusiastically about the Davis Cup. It's clear where his intentions lie in the future. Afterwards, Wally Mazur said there will be a panel to decide the next Davis Cup captain, but he very much expects it to be Leighton Hewitt. Both Andy Murray and Leighton Hewitt paid tribute to one another, and it was really quite touching to see the respect that they clearly have for one another. But you know what? I think what we will do on this final tennis podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph and supported by BNP Paribas, the bank for a changing world here in Glasgow, I think we'll just end by hearing from Leighton Hewitt, who's calling time on his Davis Cup career. And this is what it's all been about for him.
Yeah, it's been a great journey. Taken up a lot of my lifetime, really, Davis Cup and playing for my country, and thoroughly enjoyed every moment of it. I remember a lot of the older guys when I first came into the team said, you know, you have some of your biggest highs in tennis in Davis Cup, and you have some of your toughest losses in Davis Cup. And, yeah, it couldn't be more true. The opportunity, obviously, to celebrate at the end of a winning year, like 2003 especially, but 99 in my first year, I was very fortunate to be a part of that team as well. But I've definitely had my fair share of really gut-wrenching losses as well. I think it does make you stronger as a professional tennis player because, you know, it is a very selfish sport, tennis, for, you know, 10, 11 months of the year where you're just concentrating on your own game. And so for me, I've always loved the atmosphere of getting together in a group and a team and, you know, playing for your country.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.